The opinions expressed during this program are solely those of the host and guest. They do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership, management, staff, or advertisers of WMGQ Magic 98.3.
Welcome to At Central Jersey with Maggie Glynn on Magic 98.3. Yes, Yes, Good is a positive way to teach, to live your life, and to change the dynamic of your workplace. And joining us is Cheryl Hultin, a Central Jersey resident, the founder of Yes, Yes, Good, and author of the book Yes, Yes, Good, The Heart of Teaching. Cheryl, thanks so much for being on the show.
Maggie, Glynn, I thank you.
Well, I want to know right away, because, you know, I need a very positive thing in my life. And reading your book was so positive, put so many positive images into my head, Cheryl. So tell me, yes, yes, good in our audience. What is the yes? What are we saying yes to in our lives? And what are you teaching us to say yes to?
I am asking and encouraging everyone to say yes, yes, good. And part of what that is you're saying yes to your ideas. Yes to the ideas of the people that you work with, and above all else, make each other look good.
A very positive way to live your life, Cheryl. Tell me, though, how did you come up with this? Where did you come up with it, and what have you been doing with it?
Well, I came to the East Coast years ago as an actress, making my way, and started doing some improvisation and working with and through a group called Theater Sports New York, and we would do comedy improv in the city. And as we were working, the tenets of improvisation just came to me and to this day, they are my clear guides, in that so often people hear the inner critic, they hear what's not going right, and as an improviser, you're trained to say yes to your ideas and say yes to the ideas of the people you work with. And no matter what else is happening in the improvisation, you make each other look good. And that, in my mind, applies to every aspect of my entire life. And as I started to do more and more improv, I realized that this approach to thinking and to working together and actually learning, because that's what improv is, you're learning about the scene, you're learning about the people, it applied readily to taking this kind of idea and this kind of work into the school. And so I started early on, about 20 years ago, and became what's called an artist in residence or a teaching artist. And at first went to a few schools and did a little bit of work, but then working in a really challenging learning environment, which was also a challenging teaching environment, I honed the ideas of improv into that simple phrase, yes, yes, good.
And, you know, Cheryl, in your book, Yes, Yes, Good, The Heart of Teaching, you take your experience from that school and then explain to us throughout the book of how you brought these principles into the school and how other people can bring them into their classroom and into their lives. Tell us a little bit about the school that you were working in and how it affected your life.
Well, this was a school in a very difficult neighborhood, a very difficult area of learning and teaching. And for many of the students there, their traditional bridge over which to get information to and from them was not necessarily the traditional bridges in schools, which would be the linguistic bridge or the mathematical bridge, logical linguistic. These were kids who had shut down in many ways. And so the economy of their school, how people, in essence, earned things from one another was through how they could use or not use their attention, all right?
Right.
And as a performer, I realized, well, first I had to get my own attention, and in doing that, I could then perhaps engage them with theirs. And part of what happened was my need or my journey to getting their attention kind of blew out of the water any of the teaching models I had been exposed to as a learner in my own life. Or and watching other teachers and teaching artists, none of that stuff was going to work. So I literally had to reinvent how I approached learning and teaching in the classroom. And part of that, that first day involved climbing the wall, because that's part of what the kids were doing. They were climbing on their desks and climbing up onto the radiator. And and I realized, well, then I too would join that climb.
And you made it literal, and that caught their attention, I would say.
It not only caught their attention, but it caught mine as well. And I think that's a big part of learning and teaching is you being present and wondering And part of improvisation and part of Yes, Yes, Good is just that. It's being in the moment of wonder and question. And based on that, creating pathway to whatever we're working on.
Well, Cheryl, you know, literally climbing the walls, going into this extraordinarily difficult school in the city, and bringing what, you know, could be defined as art. Now, if you talk to people that you call the suits in the book, the people who run some of these schools, and you say to them, I'm going to bring art into this classroom, describing what you do and what went on there, you know, how did you even get this across to them?
Well, part of it was my desire to understand and to be understood. And I think that's a basic tenet of all art is, you know, the sharing of something and then the reflecting of what it is. And initially, part of the work that I was asked to do was to integrate the arts into curriculum. And that's it. And that is part of what I do now. There's, you know, curriculum is a noun. I've created a new word. I call it curriculate. It's a verb. And so by adding the ideas of emotion or the verbal offers, story offers to any kind of curriculum, you bring that to life. And part of what I was exposed to, especially in that school, was these were not what I call, you know, like a linear learner. You know, here's point A, we're getting to point B, and then you will end at point C, and we're all going to go in this direction. It was three-dimensional. These kids were living in a life and an environment that just demanded of them a sense of evaluation. I want to use the word evaluation.
Right.
They had, you know, they had to decide if you as a human, you know, had something that they needed, okay? And part of what we found in terms of what, you know, in our culture we call the arts, is that these kids, you know, they had vision. They had a visual learner in them. They had an audible learner in them. They had a kinesthetic learner in them that was not necessarily being accessed in this linear model. So by, you know, encouraging people to, you know, become the living cell or to speak as a question mark, it just gave these kids license to try and to fail, and in the failing, learn versus being graded or evaluated. And I think that's a big part of what Yes, Yes, Good is about, and improvisation in general, is the idea that we're gonna get up, we're going to try to communicate, we're going to see if this works. Ooh, it did not work. And then we get back and we do it again.
And the children that you were working with, and this is when, and they knew Yes, Yes, Good. They knew to say Yes, Yes, Good to you. How did you earn their trust through this and get them so on board that they got so involved and so part of it? They really, really became part of Yes, Yes, Good, didn't they?
And, you know, part of my work in any school, classroom, or group that I work with, my mantra is to hear and be heard, speak and be spoken to, love and be loved. And when you asked that question just then, I fell in love with this school and these students and where they actually were and their potential to become. And I think that is a foundation of a lot of great teaching. You know, it's a four-letter word, L-O-V-E.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's such truth to it. There's such risk to it, and there is great reward. And I think that is something that was a big part of my experience there and in all my teaching, is the idea that it's an exchange. Their voice had as much value and choice and power as anyone else's in the room. And that, when you finally realize, when you understand that you have people's attention, and perhaps you haven't ever really had it in a positive way before, I mean, that's an elixir. That is just something that drives you. And so the quick answer to that question would be there was an exchange, a true exchange of caring, of respect, and of love.
And always challenge. It wasn't easy. It was never easy. It was always challenge on all parts.
Well, you know, I explained it once as it, you know, it was kind of like trying to run a marathon, you know, while trying to take a drink of water from a glass overflowing, you know, and you spill some of it down the front of you, it gets on the road, you know, but every once in a while you would just, you know, you get nourished by a little of that H2O going down. And it was, and then also, you know what happened, Maggie, is when the kids realized that they were having success, And that's that is so important in so many aspects of education, I feel. It's the ownership of process and the ownership to and from success. And for a lot of the children that I worked with initially at the school that I write the book about, these were children where success was not something they had necessarily had a great experience with.
Right.
And rarely in a school setting. Rarely in a school setting.
And the depth of what they were able to express in a way that wasn't writing, the way they knew characters when they got up and did these emotional characters and these depth of characters. I love reading in your book how some of their teachers just could not believe what you could get out of them with Yes, Yes, Good, with improv, and with all of these things you brought into the classroom.
Well, part of what I was doing and continue to do is, create a space where people can bring what they have, to this circle of learning. There's a great approach to multiple intelligences theory, Dr. Howard Gardner, the idea that we all learn in different ways and therefore how we express ourselves has a different pathway as well. And so part of what I found through improvisation and using the multiple intelligences theory as tool was kind of like decoding, how is this person in my classroom? How are they learning? All right, now he won't write me anything, but he will draw. Great, we're drawing. From this point on, we are drawing all of our ideas, no words at all. And you would find it. So there was just a sense of, so I draw it and I'm fine. I'm like, yeah, go ahead. And so through the drawing, then they started to express. And through the expression, they started getting to the heart and the feeling of something versus just the head and the knowledge of something.
Right.
And that's a big part of my journey, too, is a lot of work is done through the know and knowledge versus the quest and question. And I feel questioning and going to places you don't understand, that's where creativity lives. That's where we get to understand a whole new world. And, I don't know if you've noticed, but we're living in one.
Oh, absolutely. We're living in a whole new world. I have to tell folks, you're listening to At Central Jersey with Maggie Glenn on Magic 98.3. We're talking with Cheryl Hultin. She is the author and the founder of Yes, Yes, Good, The Heart of Teaching. Yes, Yes, Good, The Heart of Teaching is the name of her book and the way she goes about bringing creative classroom cultures to life. And we've talked about the kids' response. How about the teacher, Cheryl, when you show up and say, all right, here's my bag of tricks. Here's what we're going to do. Start with improv. What kind of reaction did you get from the teachers at this public school in New York and the teachers that you deal with now when you come into classrooms?
I got to tell you, I am a fan of teachers and of teaching, and I think it's one of the most creative careers you could choose.
And a hard job, very hard job.
Oh, yeah. But basically, one time I asked a student what he thought a teacher does, and he said, I know what I know. I know what I don't know. I want you to help me understand what I don't know I don't know. And I was blown away by it.
Right.
Because that is teaching. And so sometimes when I go into a classroom and it's a partnership, all right, what I'm doing is a process model. We're working together towards a goal. The teacher sets the goal. And sometimes, I feel like what teachers need to reflect more in their teaching is that they don't know sometimes. They're experimenting.
Right.
So a lot of the work that I do with them and their classes through Yes, Yes, Good creates sometimes a discomfort, with people in the room. And when they're uncomfortable, I feel like that's the place where we get to grow to and from. And so there have been teachers that they light the path and I'm running with them. And there have been teachers who have been very, I'm going to say, they're just not open to this new idea, not a new idea, but this approach.
Right.
They have what they're doing. It's working pretty well. And what I find is when we start working together and they start approaching their teaching and their teaching self as a creative teaching instrument, well, then they're showing up in a different way in their classroom. And then the kids start to show up in a different way. And all of a sudden, we are seeing things new. And I think that's what Yes, Yes, Good really helps, is that people just open the idea that the group is going someplace.
Well, when you come into a place with teachers and you see that hesitation, maybe when you go and do professional workshops with them and the other things that you do, and you take it from that hesitation, which I'm sure you get quite a lot of in these places that you go to visit, the difference between when you start and when you end, what do you find the teachers go through to embrace this?
I think part of what happens is there is a time when they don't know that they're open as a learner. And in that opening of themselves as a learner, they realize, you know, there are kids in my class that I haven't necessarily reached. They haven't gotten to this new place. And part of that is because, you know, I as the teacher are asking them to do things my way, this way. And I'm a fan of that, okay? Because there are a lot of kids and there's one of you. And part of what I encourage is to try something in a different way every once in a while, because you open up that avenue of communication to a student in a new way. You know, like the Charlie Brown voice, the teacher going, wah, wah, wah. Okay? But every once in a while, when you bring in things like Yes, Yes, Good, or integrate the arts into curriculum, you open up a new way of understanding in your classroom for a student who you haven't reached.
And I think, you know, reading in your book also with the teachers and taking the teacher's response and the teacher's reason to even do something like this, you write that the teaching instrument is just that. It's an instrument and it needs tuning from time to time. And I think your workshops seem to do that for a lot of teachers. It puts them back in tune with what they've decided to do with their life, and it gives them another tool to do this.
I'm about, you know, empowering people to have voice and choice in whatever they're doing. And the teaching as a profession is such a great and powerful opportunity to bring, oftentimes children to a place where they're safe to try, you know, to try and to do well, to try and fail, and then to try again. And part of improvisation, you know, and I think, you know, schools, yes, we're going to, you know, there are skill sets that we need in many different things. You know, you need your alphabets, you need your numbers, you need these things. And I feel that we truly need the tenets of improvisation as a foundation, not only in teaching, but in learning, so that children communicate and they wonder and they expand what they know how to do by trying often.
And Cheryl Hultin, talk about some of those tenets of improv. For those of us who are not that familiar with improv, we see it, we see what improv does, but we don't know how people get there or what exactly they're doing to get there.
To that I say, you know, there's not a moment in your life that is not improvised. It's truly, you know, you can have as much information as you possibly can about a topic, and yet you are thrown into it. But the basic tenets, yes, just good, that's a big part of it. When you're working, you're saying yes to your ideas. You're asking that critic, that person going, man, that one's not going to work, to just calm down a little bit. You say yes to the other person's ideas as you're working with them, and you make each other look good. Now, there are four offers in improvisation. There's a physical offer, meaning you're going to use your body in some way to, you know, determine story. There's a verbal offer. You're going to make sound. You're going to talk. You're going to become something. There's a character offer, where you actually become the character of something, and story offer, meaning we are eventually going to tell and be part of story. And the word offer, O-F-F-E-R, is the foundation. You are sending out and receiving idea, concept, moment with these other people in real time. And if you're working with improvisers who, you know, have a developed skill set, even if you, you're new to this, their ground that they stand on is wanting to make you look good. And so it's about taking where the group is and finding out the destination.
So if you are in the group, it is really about working together as a group in a positive way. Is that a kind of a way to sum up improv?
In a positive way and in a creative way. See, I think creativity and its development as a muscle, it needs to be exercised. And so improvisation, whether it is in your painting, your drawing, your music, your storytelling, your teaching, improvisation, in essence, it really makes you have a workout to be available to idea and to think differently.
And to be very present, as you said, present in the moment at all times, which can be exhausting too, I would say, Cheryl.
It could be, but it's also, it's so exciting when you do a, just even with some of the younger students I work with, and you're doing a word at a time story. And basically what that means is I'm going to say a word, you're going to say a word, we go back and forth, and we try to tell a simple idea or a complex idea. And you watch this other person that you're working with understand, first of all, everyone's attention is on them. Second of all, whatever comes out of their mouth, we're going to make it look good. And third of all, they have the power to take the story anywhere that they want to. And sometimes that little tiny moment is something that just builds within, often a child, the sense of, whoa, look, I have place and space.
And I have created something right away, immediately, with this group.
I am a huge fan of the arts in all aspects of the world. And in when a child learns how to play a musical instrument and they practice, when they learn how to dance, when they learn how to paint, when they study the lines, all those things, you know, and there are many sources that tell us how important that is. And improvisation within that spectrum of the arts has such great value. It's fast food almost. And that children who maybe don't have access to those instruments to practice or that team to be with, all of a sudden they are creating a creative journey that didn't exist before, but now they own, and they take it with them.
And I want to take you back to your book, Yes, Yes, Good, The Heart of Teaching, and the public school that you were teaching at in New York City, and going through this with these kids and the administration and the teachers. Is there any child in particular, any event that stands out for you in the couple years that you were there that you saw such a dramatic change in this individual from Yes, Yes, Good?
Oh, you know, and yes, so often the work that I may go in and do, all right, it's the people before me have paved the way, all right? So I might come in because of this different approach and reach a student in a different way, and therefore they respond in a different way. And at that particular school, there was a young man, we called him Little Man, Lem. And Lem I've come to know the term selective mute. He had stopped talking.
Mm-hmm.
And he, as an improviser, would communicate fully through physical offer and character offer, story offer, but no verbal offer. He wouldn't make any sounds. And his storytelling through his body was just, I recall every move. It was so powerful. And as he realized that there was this other place that he could use as well, which was verbal offer, when he first started using it, it blew us all away. Here's this child who is deciding to have a voice, literally a voice, in his learning for one of the first times in a public setting. And you can read about Little Man in the book, but that kid blew me away.
And fully engaged and part of the process with the rest of his class.
With the rest of his class. And then also, you know, a big part of improvisation is reading people and being read by people, the emotional intelligence, as they're called. And I feel more and more as we have, especially younger people, have less and less interactions with people in terms of playing games and doing things with one another, learning how to read one another, and they're spending a lot more time with screens, that sort of thing. The emotional intelligences need to be somewhat remediated. And in improvisation, especially with Little Man, I mean, this man, he was a silent young human, but he studied people, you know, and he watched them. And then as he chose to, he decided to speak to us and become, you know, a great storyteller. But it's through this the emotional intelligences that I think the arts especially just help children and adults find a way to be with one another in the group and take the group to the next best place.
And can make a huge difference because they cannot be reached maybe other ways. And the arts are a major part of reaching quite a few kids in all of our education system.
Oh, definitely. And I think often there are students who are not reached in a traditional classroom that show up sometimes in choir, in band, in a sport activity, in a play, you know. And the more we give the opportunity for those kids to have those opportunities, you know, that's important. And within the classroom and within learning, I really, really feel the value of improvisation and the ability to, bring the living cell to life, that sort of thing. It gives children different avenues, different bridges over which they can travel to get the information not only into themselves, but then back out into the world.
You know, Cheryl Hultin, you do motivational workshops, professional development, you do one-on-one coaching. What made you decide to sit down and take all of the things that you had seen and all of the things you had experienced in the classroom and throughout your career and sit down and write a book? What motivated you to finally put it all in one place?
I would say my husband.
Well, we're happy for that then. Thank you.
It was one of those. I was to the place where I was trying to decide if I was going to continue my work in teaching, and Jeff said, before you decide that you don't want to do it, you've been telling these stories for a while. Why don't you just give a voice to them? And what I found in giving voice to them through the stories was, perhaps even my vocation, the idea that this is what I'm here to do. And so on whatever scale I'm doing it, whether it's, like you said, it's one-on-one or in a larger venue, I really feel that giving people path to their voice and to the choices that they have the ability to make in whatever setting that they are, that is where I am and that's where I'm going.
And the teachers who have one-on-one coaching or have gone through your creative classroom culture, who been in the motivational workshops, what are some of the responses you've gotten that have really touched you after those workshops were over?
I will tell you, there have been many wonderful instances. Most recently, working with some of the pre-service teachers at Rutgers and having some of the students come up to me and talk about learning how to teach, not just what to teach, but how to teach and how important that is. And I worked with one group a couple years back where I had said to the group early on, if I'm really good at my job, I'm going to make you uncomfortable at some point today. If I'm great at my job, I'll make you, you'll just want it to stop. You'll want me to stop. And if I'm brilliant, you'll actually want to leave the room. Because part of what I'm doing is asking them to approach topic and teaching in ways that they are less familiar. And there was one teacher in the group who, this woman was fighting me tooth and nail, very, not openly, but I could tell she was very uncomfortable. And we got to the end of the workshop together, and we were discussing what had happened. And so she hadn't spoken that much, but then she said, all right, so you said if you were good at your job, I'd want to step. What'd you say? If you were brilliant at your job, I'd want to leave. And I looked at her and I said, yeah. And she said, well, you were pretty brilliant today.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And we all got kind of quiet. And she said, because I didn't want to be here this whole time. And I said, well, what's going on? And her group of teachers who love and care about her were really supportive of her. And she just said, part of what I saw today is how kind of tired I am and how I haven't been teaching the way that I know I could teach. But you're creating, a vocabulary and a space and a place that I think, I can get better. And not just, and I'm not talking about getting better at teaching. I'm talking about, as a teacher in a classroom, you're the one. If you don't take the oxygen mask first, then they all go down, all right? So part of what I do with teachers is I encourage them to really get to know their teaching instrument, to exercise that instrument, to try things where they are less familiar, and create a creative classroom culture that encourages risk and change in a very safe environment that does have rules and parameters, all right? And a part of what makes that environment, I think, really tangible for all of them is the idea of yes, yes, good.
And it is a positive change for all. And I thank you, Cheryl, so much for being on the program. You have to tell people, you must have a website. So you have to tell people how to get to your website, how to get your book.
Sure. The book is available through Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. Facebook, you can find me, Yes, Yes, Good. And yesyesgood.com will be up by the end of this month. I also want folks to know I am faculty at Connecticut Higher Order Thinking Schools. We have a great institute coming up this summer, July 13th through 17th. It's an amazing journey for teachers, principals, students at www.higherorderthinkingschools.org.
And we'll put that up on the website, too. Cheryl Hultin, the author of Yes, Yes, Good, The Heart of Teaching, thank you so much for being on At Central Jersey. Missed a show? Listen online or download episodes at magic983.com.